everybody. Al Alcoholic. Sobriety date May 5th, 1987. That's because AA works. And it works under all conditions. I like to always start out with that I woke up free from alcohol today. I don't want to forget that. I'm going to go to bed free from alcohol. Not only was I free from alcohol, I didn't want to take a drink today. And that's pretty good for an alcoholic of my type that drinks on a daily basis. Drinks themselves into a stupor and oblivion. And drinks everything away that's important in life. And to be free of that mental obsession is one of the miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in a meeting this morning. And actually, share a little bit about this week. A guy came to the meeting. I hadn't seen him before, and he drank after 8 years. And he had 2 months back. And a lady this morning came about 50 minutes late to the meeting, and she had just drank again after some period of sobriety, but I don't think it was very long. She had lost everything in that drunk. Everybody had pulled out, and she was alone. And a guy that I had met online that I'd been sponsoring for 4 months, he just got drunk too about 3 days ago. This is a strange mental obsession. Wilson called it the insanity of the first drink. I don't think you can totally figure that out. Bill tells stories about it in the big book. He dedicates a whole chapter with stories and more about alcoholism. But when it comes down to it, you don't have any better idea than they do. Alcoholics Anonymous, I do believe, and we heard this since we've come here, is an inside job. There's no question about that. This is an inside job. This is a conceding to our innermost self and then taking the actions necessary to bring about recovery. You can't do that for anybody else, even though you wish that you could. You can't. It's got to come from inside them. And I think that Wilson was very clear in the big book, and I really like the wording in Forward to the Second Edition. He says, as alcoholics who came to AA and really tried. Okay. And I think that word in quotation marks, really tried, is very important. One meeting a week, no sponsor, no steps, isn't really trying. It's winging it. Okay. There are some people that do go to a lot of meetings. They are involved in the steps on the outside, they say. They have a sponsor, and they drink. You can interview that and try to figure out, well, what did you miss? The guy that I had sponsored for 4 months said he saw the ABC store, did a U-turn, went and got drunk. He said he got drunk because he wasn't praying. Well, maybe. I know people that didn't pray for a little while and didn't drink. Another person that got drunk said that they got drunk because they were dishonest. Okay, I get it. This step in the big book says that could be a real reason for sure. But I know people in AA that have kept secrets for long periods of time and haven't drank. Somebody else will say, I drank because I'm resentful all the time. Well, me too sometimes. Haven't taken a drink of alcohol. And what happens is we have a series of excuses that look good, sound good. I drank because, but really the reality is an alcoholic drinks, they don't need a reason at all. They drink because they're alcoholic. And what Wilson talked about and more about alcoholism as he ended up that chapter, he said that we need to have an effective mental defense against the first drink. And I believe the whole big book and the program of action becomes an effective mental defense against the first drink. Self-knowledge isn't, okay? You can try all the self-help you want. It's not an effective mental defense. Self-will, though an alcoholic is a very strong-willed person, they're not weak-willed, but it doesn't hold up. So what AA kind of fell into is that we're going to have what they initially called a vital spiritual experience, later turned the terminology into a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, the doctor and the doctor's opinion called an entire psychic change. And the spiritual appendix, it talks about a God conscious. So it kind of comes all over and then pinpoints, here's the solution to this. And we have steps that we take to get there. And we have a fellowship that supports us. And what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous that I think is really quite an ingenious, awesome, and certainly borrowed from other people is we tell stories of how we recover. We tell stories of how we got hope. We tell the story of how we came to believe in a power greater than ourselves. We are a society of storytellers. And in those stories, we can motivate people to come out and say, yeah, me too, have a me too moment. And in that, hopefully they get that attitude that I think brings you into AA and not around. That's the attitude of really trying. I'm going to give it my all, going to give it my best, but you don't have to be perfect. And then that person is able not just to get sober, but they're able to maintain their sobriety. And so what we share in Alcoholics Anonymous is that we have a winning combination here. And I believe the winning combination is the effective mental defense that Bill talked about. Though he may not have totally pinpointed all the wording that we use because we've been all here a lot longer than when the book was published in April of 1939. We have a lot of experience. As one is that we have a home group. And we're consistent in showing up to the home group on time. And we have a service job in that home group. And that home group is a weekly commitment that I don't miss unless there's a really good reason and not an excuse. Being tired and busy is an excuse. We're all tired and we're all busy sometimes, so you're at the meeting tonight. Living in the winning combination is taking the steps out of the big book. We believe that's probably the best place to take them. You can certainly add some other stuff later on, but it has a set of directions. But the problem is I'm pretty smart. And without your help, I could miss the whole thing. And I did it for 18 months. Didn't know how to read it because I didn't know how to read alcoholic. And you taught me how to read alcoholic because it was written by alcoholics for alcoholics. Living in the winning combination is forming a relationship with a power greater than ourselves. And the primary means of which we do that is prayer and meditation. And I like to throw in meetings too. I think that's a very spiritual place of meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous. At least it represents itself most of the time. So. And then what I've got to learn to do, I've got to learn to be a giver. Because my default position, and I tell you, I work with a lot of people on and off. And when I say a lot of people, there are people in AA that work with a lot of people. I mean, lots, hundreds of people. No, I'm not there. Not even close. But one thing I found with the alcoholic of my type is that we can be very self-consumed people. Very, very consumed in ourselves. I don't know if we have the monopoly on that. The non-alcoholics, are they just self-consumed? They could be. I know more about the alcoholic personality than I do about the non-alcoholic because I'm an alcoholic. I've got some folks lately that I've been sponsoring, and they're very, very consumed. When they call me, they launch out for 15 minutes on their resentments. I get it. I've been there, done that. And what I like nowadays is that we have cell phones. When I came here, we didn't. So if it all doesn't get said in the conversation, because a lot of times they're so self-consumed, they can't hear the other side of it. It's blocked by their self-obsessions. And sometimes that self-obsession shows up very clearly as my need to be right, and I'll show them. And every once in a while, I get in a little word like spiritual principles are the answer to all of our problems. I know it doesn't look like, and it's pretty hard, but, and then I get blasted out with more, but you don't understand. Okay. So I like to text them after the conversation. I sit on a while and pray about it, think about it, and say, hey, by the way, there's a couple of things to think about. Going on for 15 minutes about your resentments, that's fine and dandy. We've probably all been guilty about that from time to time, but venting about resentments is not a solution. And to call up four or five different alcoholics to vent about whatever it is, your marriage or on a daily basis, have you gotten any better? That's the first thing that I ask. Number two, have you applied anything the big book talks about resentments at all? And if not, next time, why don't we talk about some of those solutions that we have in the big book? One of those solutions is not venting it all the time. Okay. The solution in the book to resentment is a challenge and sometimes very difficult for an ego-driven, self-consumed individual like myself. That it asks me, first of all, to ask God to remove that anger. Okay? Very simple. Hey, God, can you please remove this anger from me? Then it says something like, we avoid retaliation argument. We don't treat sick people that way because we destroy a later chance of being helpful, period. Look at it. So I always trying to, if I could get my voice in there as they're clamoring and kind of shout, avoid retaliation argument. Then it's drowned out with the worldly clamors. I can hear the drowning. So I put that in the text. And then it comes up with the last paragraph that's awfully difficult. That we own up to it without blaming them. We disregard the other person entirely. We don't have a part and they don't have a part anymore. We disregard that. Now that's not easy. I'd rather you have a part and me a part because then we're equal victims in this crime. Says nope. And it spends the whole paragraph helping me realize that I have to disregard that. I can't blame them, though I'd like to. And that I have to realize that I'm the sick one. Okay. Now, is that a quick fix? Not at all. Is that the process that we do? Yes, there's not a quick fix there. It's not like, okay, now I realize that I took that. Okay, I said the prayer, blah, 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 blah. Hey, now I'm gone. Not really. I spent close to 6 years in resentment. Okay. So I have an awful lot of experience. Because of AA and doing this process, one thing that never came up in my mind was to take a drink of alcohol because it would make this thing better. So when somebody tells me I'm going to drink over that, I go, that's alcoholic thinking. Okay, because in AA, we don't have to drink over anything unless it becomes an excuse. And when it becomes an excuse, then I can go come into AA meeting and say, I got drunk because I was angry at my wife. Okay, well, here's a good one. This is a late, let's update this one. I got drunk because of COVID. I couldn't get to the meetings. Okay, that's a good one. That's a new one. I've heard that a lot. A lot of people got drunk because of COVID. A lot of people quit AA because of COVID. No, I don't think so. The people I know that were in AA, nobody quit. We bloomed where we were planning. We got online. We did what we had to do. We called each other. We did those things and we made it work. Our lives didn't only stay the same. They got better. So when somebody comes, yeah, COVID made me drink because I got away from the meetings. They weren't there anymore. No, I don't think so. That's, again, that's one of those trivial excuses that in the alcoholic well-defended mind, you're not going to get an argument, okay? It's yes, that's why I got drunk. No, that's not what the book says. The book says you got drunk because you didn't have an effective mental defense. And that's what I got to have. So then it comes and it really hits us pretty hard when it says that we had to concede to our innermost self. So we know the word concede is very close to surrender. Okay. In fact, I think if you look it up, you got surrender in that definition. If not, look in the thesaurus and you'll find it. So we concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. the delusion that we're like other people presently has to be smashed, not broken, because if it's broken, it rebuilds itself, it has to be smashed. What smashes that delusion? Bottom. Now, I also know in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went through it, maybe you went through it, that sometimes the bottom looks like a 911 call. Oh, watch. I want to lose every. As soon as I start getting a little back of drinking, it's not a bottom. It's a 911 call. A bottom is when you've had enough and the surrender flag comes up and you go, hey, look, listen, ladies and gentlemen, I got something new. You haven't heard this before. I'm willing to do anything you ask me to do here, and I'm not going to debate and argue it like I used to. Used to ask how many meetings I need to go to if we brought up 7 a week. Oh, no, I can't. I'm not going to do that this time. Hey, let's get started in the steps immediately. Ah, they told me to wait. Who told you to wait? The whole AA program emphasis is that we come in here and we take the steps. There's no waiting here. We're talking about your life and the people that you affect around you, not just you. This step process is an immediate, but it requires no perfection. The first time I did the steps off the wall, I had an off the wall program. I'm glad you didn't give me a grade. But I can tell you one thing, that I had that attitude because of that bottom, that I was ready to really try here, and I wasn't debating and arguing with anybody. If you said to do something, I tried to do it to the best of my ability. No perfection required, only willingness. When I wrote the first inventory, it was nothing like the big book. It was a piece of legal paper with about 10 secrets on it. I don't even think anger was on it. I know fear wasn't on it, but you know, it worked because I had that attitude that I wanted to stay sober. And what happened eventually is I bumped into the big book at 18 months of sobriety. We had Joe and Charlie, they were up in Containing, Pennsylvania, and I think it was December 1989. And I had a big book experience. It was different. It changed me totally. It was a drastic change in my recovery. And I know not everybody has big book experiences. I don't think that keeps you in the chair. I know that it was a significant change in my life to have those two men explain what was in that big book, which I'd never heard before, and to actually try to follow along with them to the best of my ability in those set of directions that totally changed my life. Totally. Not even close. When I walked out of that weekend in a snowstorm in Containing, Pennsylvania, I was a different person all the way. Still had a lot to learn. In that weekend, I believe, or somewhere near that, in that big book experience, the obsession to drink alcohol was removed. Before that, I was still thinking about it on a daily basis. I wasn't planning it, but I was thinking about drinking. Not in a way that I was going to get close to it, but it was there. It was in my mind somewhere during the day. And after that, it wasn't there anymore. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't come to visit every once in a while, doesn't pop up. I love these meetings when they start saying, oh, I had a drunk drinking last night. Oh, God. I'm like, you know why you had a drunk drink? Because you're sober. You're an alcoholic. That's probably a good thing you had a drunk dream. Did you ever have a drunk dream when you were drunk? I didn't. Did you ever have a sober dream when you were drunk? I didn't. But in sobriety, the animal's in the cage, but the cage ain't locked. It's in there somewhere. None of us are totally out of the woods. Is there a chance that I could die drunk one day? There is a chance. Okay. I've seen a lot of people drink after years, and a lot of years. Do I think I'm any different? Not necessarily. We're both alcoholics. The only difference is I may be doing something different than what they're doing with Alcoholics Anonymous. What you have suggested to me over the years, the very best place that I can be in AA is in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. When you get around Alcoholics Anonymous, that's where the problems start. And you can tell, well, how do you know if somebody's around Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, I can give you a little clue. Stop going to meetings for the most part. Not all. Now, is that the whole problem? No. Is that the symptom of the problem? Yes. What they're saying is, I'm not interested in this anymore. Okay? So slowly but surely, they cut back. And I've watched it in my county for the years, is that they got on the one meeting a week plan. Now, the problem with one meeting a week is if you miss that one, you don't have any meetings. Okay? And as I start to distance myself from you, what happens is I start distancing myself from Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I may not intend to that. I might walk out on a good word. Hey, I've got God in my life now. Thank you very much. I don't need all these meetings and all these alcoholics, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to venture off. You gave me the God thing, and I'm good to go. Well, Wilson said what drowned that out was the worldly clamor, sometimes within and sometimes without, that life happens. And what happens is it starts drowning out slowly but surely that solution that I may have heard, maybe I was doing for a while, maybe I wasn't, but it drowns it out. And the fact is I can't restore myself to sanity. Oh, I would like to, but I can't. Okay? So if I'm talking myself out of the solution, and I'm the alcoholic described in the big book, what happens to me over a period of time is I start talking myself back into a drink, just subtly. Nothing big at first. It'd be nice to get drunk today. Okay? Oh, no. But as time goes on, maybe I'll go past the ABC store tonight a couple times and think how nice it'd be to get some whiskey. Sam's not in there anymore, so I don't have to worry about being embarrassed. Before, I had to really make sure up in this area which one I went to, because if Sam was in there and he knew I came in AA, I can't do that. So maybe I'll go way up the road. Hopefully Sam's not there. You probably did a little Sam in there. But slowly, surely, what I do is I talk myself into a drink. And in my mind, as an alcoholic and being powerless over alcohol, when I start getting the conversation in my mind that I'm talking myself out of one, I'm talking myself into one, I'm talking myself out of one, I'm talking myself in, I'm going to lose. And why I'm going to lose is because I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm going to drink again. I've lost my effective mental defense. You know, lately I've been working in my woods. I've really taken this on in a very alcoholic fashion. I've got my chainsaws, I've got my pole saws, I've got everything. And I'm killing, I mean, this is very alcoholic. Same time I'm standing in my big porch, I've got a lot of things going on. Just, I can be a very obsessed person, but get a lot done. Okay. So I've got piles of brush everywhere. I think I got 30 piles of brush and I'm still cutting. What I noticed though, and it reminded me of the person that gets away from us, because this is a we program, not a me program. Okay? Is that I cut down these pine trees and I use a pole saw and branch. Then I take the chainsaw, I cut them up enough that I can put them, store them so I can burn them later on. And I've noticed as I walk past the pines, 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they're all green. Maybe on the fourth week, still a little bit brown, but still green. But you let it go on for a couple months and the whole thing turns brown because it got disconnected from the tree. And what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous when we start to see the AA member float away? At first, they stay very green. Hey, come back. Hey, no problem. Doing just fine. No meetings, of course. Haven't talked to a sponsor in 6 months. Still doing the 11th step. Yeah. And it looks green. That person's green. But as they get farther and farther, they start getting brown. We just can't see it because it's on the inside. And they don't have that life that we get in AA. We like to call that the magic. I like to call it the energy field. My problem, and I think the 11th step in the big book really clarifies it as well as anything is I try to arrange life to suit myself, so I burn up all my energy on me. And in AA, when we get into the energy field, which is the active part of Alcoholics Anonymous, we get consumed with that, the magic happens. And we're able to take 10 or 15 calls from alcoholics. We're able to stain the porch. We're able to cut down all the trees. My woods are really looking good. You know, we're able to get on the bicycle and ride 20 miles all in one day. And other things as well, take care of the family. We're able to do those things, and we're not so consumed in ourselves that we're sitting in a chair going, God, this is awful. Boy, I've been tired all day. I woke up tired. I bet you did. Been there. Believe me. I've been there. I had a rough one. I went through about 15 months of darkness. When I got burned out in my profession off of resentments with my partner, then my wife drank at 21 years of sobriety, and there's other things going on too, and I just burned myself out. And in those 15 months, I had zero energy. In fact, I had read this article, and I said, when you're in that kind of climate in your brain, the best thing to do is kick yourself out of bed. And when I got about, I felt like I there was weights tying me into that bed. You just need to lay here all day long. And I had to get out and push myself. And it was a struggle. I didn't get the porch done. I did get on the bicycle. I did get to a meeting on a daily basis, sometimes two if I needed to. You had trained me well. You had told me, and I have experienced this, sometimes the very best that I can do, the very best I can do here is get to a meeting with my shoes tied. And if my shoes aren't tied, I can still come to the meeting. I'm glad that you gave me those kind of directions, because you didn't expect anything from me. Because when you sometimes you're in a downtime, you can't have expectations on yourself, because what's reeling up here is the old crazy picture show, right? And it's got all sorts of negativity in the reels. I mean, everything is negative and nothing's going to work out. And I tell you what, when you get the voice of hopelessness and sobriety in your brain, it's the same voice, because I've talked to a lot of people later on in sobriety that have hit some dead ends in their sobriety and they're not doing too good. There's a voice of hopelessness, and it comes with the package. It says, this isn't going to get any better. You're down for the count, buddy. Your best years are behind you. And you believe it. But what AA told me, wait. Yeah, you can believe that, Al, but you got to act differently than that. Go to the meetings. Call your sponsor. Say your prayers. Try to help out another alcoholic. And I remember when my sponsor, in the middle of this very, very dark place, he would ask me this kind of question. Is your home group enthusiastic? And what are you doing about it if it's not? I don't understand that. But it's what I need. How many people are you working with? I don't feel like working with anybody. I didn't say that. I said how many people are you working with. So what good sponsorship does, it helps me to act past my emotions and the intensity of those emotions that come in an alcoholic form, because they sometimes are very intense because they're exaggerated. And what the actions of AA do, not as a quick fix. So don't say, oh yeah, this guy said go to somebody and call the sponsor and be okay. I didn't say that. It's not a quick fix around. But slowly but surely, what happens in the intensity of those emotions in sobriety, the actions of AA start to diminish them. Slowly but surely, those intensities get diminished. And it happens right here. Now, here's the thing. And Wilson said this. He said, we can't totally explain that. So we tell stories about it. we can't explain this totally, this magic of Alcoholics Anonymous that happens here among us. It's a God-given gift. That all of a sudden you're in a bad spot in life. It's not going to get any better. And over a period of time, all of a sudden, when I came up here today, I've been in many different places in AA over the years when I come up, many different places. Sometimes I've been awfully resentful, like when I was burned out, I've been full of fear. Sometimes I haven't felt like coming up here. I've been very unhappy. You know, but tonight I come up here in a very good place, okay? A very good place of state of mind. Okay? And I think besides the problems in life, and we all of us, I'm gonna say all of us, and maybe it's not all of us, but I think it's all of us, we have problems in life, okay? There are things in life. There is always something on the plate. If it's not there, it's gonna come. I'm not saying they're big, maybe they're just small. But there's something there, okay? Something in the family, something in personal relationships. They just don't behave, and they never will. Maybe something financially. Maybe some fear came up. Maybe there's a health problem. Maybe there's something. There's always something in life. Happy, joyous, and free here is not the destination. It's the breather between the rounds, okay? Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. Our primary purpose is not happy, joyous, and free, but all of us would like to be. Okay. So with the problems of life that are here, it's not all rainbows, unicorns, and lollipops, it's life. I think there's another thought process that comes in here. Let's enjoy life at the same time. Okay. Let's have some fun also. Let's not just be tied down by the weights of these difficulties, which sometimes they seem very tied down. And sometimes you're going to be unhappy as part of life. Okay. Sometimes you're going to be full of fear. It's part of life. Sometimes you're going to be angry and disappointed. It's part of life. But at the same time, can I absolutely insist on enjoying life? Can I do things to embrace life at the same time, even though there are some difficulties that aren't solved yet? And I say yes. That if we expect everything to be solved all the time before we enjoy life, we're going to miss it. Okay? Going to miss it. I've missed it some. The book talks about it. Squandered hours that used to be worthwhile. I am a squanderer. Okay? I've had all of these experiences here. I think sometimes, and Billy, do you have to, does anybody have the time? I don't have a watch up here. Oh, thank you very much, Sam. It's important to ask for help around here. So in this day and age, and I believe that it probably started, I'm a little bit of a closet historian, and I like to say a student of the history, and at times very pitiful because I can't retain everything that's in front of me. I can't even come close to it. But in 1975, a guy named Mac Cheater from the Golden Slippers in Winnipeg, Canada, gave a talk at the International in Denver on the Golden Slippers of how they were all drunk all the time. And then they got the book and they followed everything in the book. They did what the book asked them to do. They stopped at the periods. They stopped at the actions. They did it. They did it together in a group of 10 or 11 people, and they all stayed sober. This enlightened certain people in that Denver audience. And they started to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. At the same time, we have Joe and Charlie in about 1973. They're starting to study the big book in groups of people. And they're starting to make some realizations in the big book that maybe the fellowship was not a part of. And in 1980, in the International, in New Orleans, in the Holiday Inn, they were put there by a man named Wesley Parrish, which was my first sponsor, but he was dead by the time I got him as a sponsor. Wesley Parrish brought him in, and these tapes, 100 of them went around, and Joe and Charlie after that went around the world. In Denver, we have a place, we have a certain fellowship called Fellowship of the Spirit, and they're starting to study the book differently than Joe and Charlie. We have two thought processes, and all of a sudden, it has gone all over AA. We have line by line. We have all sorts of stuff. And it's all good within itself. But I think sometimes we can get too waterlogged. And what happens in the discussions about steps and steps and steps, and I've heard wonderful people do discussions on steps. What happens in the translation sometimes, it sounds like there's heavy lifting here. And if you didn't do that step, if you did that step right, there's heavy lifting in that step. And I say this is a simple problem. I say the directions in the big book are very simple. And I think sometimes as a fellowship in our over-education of the steps as we unsimplify them. That's been my experience. And sometimes when somebody gets up behind the podium, and I'm going to give you the other side of this too, and they do a step two presentation for 55 minutes, I'm like, I couldn't do it that way. At the same time, the person next to me goes, I've never heard it like that. That just changed my life. So you don't always know. Okay? I've seen that happen a lot. What doesn't get to me gets to you, vice versa, in AA. We don't know where it goes or how it goes. So over the years, when I've looked at these steps, I'm going to bring in a couple steps here where I have simplified them in my life. And I want to start a little bit with step three, which I really think in AA, we need a cheat sheet to it, okay? Because a lot of people get bogged down in it. And the cheat sheet is in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, if we read it for what it is. So step three is built on step one and step two. Okay. So if you admit that you're powerless over alcohol, that your life has become unmanageable, mental conclusion, not a working step. Bill Wilson said that. Step two came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. The big book will explain that thoroughly. I'm not going to. I will tell you the insanity is not about you being nuts. It's the insanity of the first drink. Just to give you a little clue there. And I have taken that mental conclusion. I have built up to the point that the book talks about, can I make this decision, be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis? That's the open door to step three of making a decision. Okay. Made a decision. Everybody misses that at first. I'm going to go to work in the third step, just what it says. I'm going to turn my life and my will over to the care of God as we understand right here, right now. I'm going to go to work on it, take it back, turn it over. Doesn't say any of that. Okay. What it does is it's the ultimate conditions of surrender. It shows us what a life looks like based on self-will, then guilty, and what a life looks like based on a relationship with God. And the call to duty in the third step is we had to stop playing God. You know why? It didn't work. There it is. Okay. We have conditions of surrender, but what the third step asks us to do doesn't happen in the third step. It's made a decision. Okay. And what's the care of God? It's not the control of God. It's the care. My friend likes to say where the care of God shows up is in Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. And I like that. So how do we make this decision? We start writing a four-step inventory. Okay. We're not taking it back all day long and those kind of things. And if that's what you do, that's what you do. But I'm going to just kind of relating what the book's coming at us. It says, though a vital and crucial step, it has a little permanent effect at less at once followed by 4 through 9. So if I'm going to make a third step decision, that's what it is, conditions of surrender. I'm going to take a look at that. Wonderful pages in there. How am I going to start that condition? Is I am going to start doing an inventory. Okay? Write an inventory. And it's going to show me. The big book shows me how to take my inventory because I don't know how to do it. Okay? I need a sponsor in there. And maybe some of you to come in there. Okay, how do I do this? Okay, ask for help. I write my inventory. Then I share it in the fifth step. Okay. Step four has the third step decision in it. Step five has the third step decision in it, but now it's an action. So at the conclusion of the fifth step, it's going to ask me some things. One, I'm going to thank God from the bottom of my heart that I know him better. Okay, simple. Thank you, God. I know you better. Then it's going to say that I need to spend an hour in a fifth step meditation. Okay. And what am I meditating on? The first five proposals. Did I do them? Did I make mortar without sand? Have you ever tried to make mortar without sand? I'll tell you what happens. It doesn't work. Okay. So I have a review and a set of questions and a fifth step meditation for 1 hour. It's not that big of a deal. Okay. And then I ask myself, if I still cling to something, I'm in the sixth step now that everybody in AA wants to add something. Bill didn't write it good enough. Yes, he did. He wrote two significant prayers. That's the sixth step. That's the seventh step. They're significant prayers. He didn't write a list of opposite character defects that I need to practice. If you want to do that, that's fine. The opposite of the character defects. You want to do that, that's fine. It's never worked for me. I'm not working on myself. I'm not working on my character defects. I'm praying. And I'm praying for willingness. If I still cling to something that I won't let go, I ask God to help me be willing. Significant prayer, done it. So what would those look like? Well, maybe I got a secret I didn't share with you because I'm scared. It's a sexual secret. Those are usually the secrets that I don't share in the fifth step because I'm ashamed of myself. I'm worried what you think about me. Other stuff we usually do pretty good. I stole, I was fearful, I was resentful, but I did that sexual thing. I'm not going to tell anybody that. Well, most people have all done a sexual thing. So you're not alone, all right? So the seventh step is a prayer. When ready, okay, my creator, can you now have all of me good and bad? Significant prayer, take it. Okay, I'm coming to you, warts and all. Could you please remove from me every single defect of character that stands in my way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows? So we're asking to have that removed that stands in my usefulness, not the ones that bother me the most. Significant. As I go from here, do your bidding. Amen. The answer to the seven-step prayer is steps 8 and 9. So what I'm doing in this process of the fifth step meditation is I'm preparing myself to clean up anything that's still there and start to make amends. Now, in the 10th step, he made it real simple. When selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear crop up, we ask God at once. He boiled it down right there into one prayer. Hey, God, can you please remove this? Simplicity, not heavy lifting. And I'll give you an example. So I'm 5-6 years sober somewhere in there, 4-6 years. I know I'm right in the ballpark. I got a financial problem. I'm spending more money than I make, and I can't stop it, and I prayed myself to death. I've done an inventory. I've shared it, and I'm spending money. I'm spending more than I make, and that's how you get in debt. It's simple to get out of debt. Don't spend more than you make. Okay? It's a very simple equation. And finally, in a burst of fear and stress, I asked my sponsor for help. After I was trying to do everything, really to work on myself to have that disappear, and to work on the opposite wasn't working for me. It was a very obsessive character defect. And I said, Bob, I don't know what to do with this, but he says, very simple. That defect is going to follow the same path you did when you got to the point that you weren't drinking anymore. And how did you get to that point of getting in that position in your mind that you didn't want to drink? You had to keep drinking. Same thing with this money spending problem that you have is you're going to have to keep spending money. And I had people in AA, oh, you got to stop this, stop that. No, that's working on me. It doesn't work. Now, there are some areas that, yes, you should stop and you can stop. But when it's an obsessive, could be sex. Same thing. Could be gambling. Could be food. There are some obsessive levels that happen here that by practicing the opposite, it just doesn't work. It gets worse and it aggravates you because it makes you feel more guilty because you can't stop it. So sometimes you have to ride it. And I had to go to the bottom to where, again, I hit that bottom. And what happened in that bottom is I went to a guy that was very wealthy and I said, I need help. I can't live this way anymore. God, I need your help and your strength. And this person helped me get out of debt at 13 years of sobriety. I was $28,000 in debt. I was zero on the sheets. And I never had a money problem again up to this date. But I still got some life left in me. I was able to build a business. It was quite successful to the partners. We didn't get along and kind of crashed and burned our company, just the way it is. I thought I'd worked to 65 years old. And I was retired at 58 years old. I was retired with zero debt, zero mortgage, zero car payment, zero anything, zero. To me, that's still astounding the way that my father used to say, hey, money doesn't grow on trees and you can't put everything on a credit card. And I really thought you could. And what AA taught me is I had to get sober financially. I had to get sober in a lot of parts of my life. And I got sober financially. I found I didn't need the shiny things, okay? And I could have afforded some of those shiny things with cash because I wasn't burning money anymore. I was piling it up, saving. I didn't need a lot of things that I thought I needed at one time. My wants have never gotten me in trouble unless I've needed them. That's when they get me in trouble, okay? So that's one of my stories on not working on myself. I don't have the capability of fixing myself. I've got to follow patterns sometimes. I've got to get mighty unhappy for things to change sometimes, and that's okay. It's okay. It's part of the equation here. As long as I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous and not around Alcoholics Anonymous, as long as I'm surrounded by you and I've got God in my life, how pitiful they may look sometimes, I stand a chance. Because I tell you, I've gotten better in Alcoholics Anonymous despite me. And the only way you can get from point A to point B here is through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and God as we understand. That's it. There's no other way. Can't explain it totally to you. I can just share a story about it. I don't know how to totally put it in words other than share what I'm sharing. My wife got sober. My kid was having problems. Medical science told us we couldn't have kids, had a kid at 49 years old. Don't believe medical science. Oh, man. Okay. And he had some problems growing up. And I talked to my sponsor one day and I said, look, we got some difficulties here. We got some pretty good difficulties here. You know, I'm doing the best I can. And I tell you, I'm not perfect. I'm not father of the year sometimes. And he said, you know, God doesn't have grandkids. I said, what? God doesn't have grandkids. He said, they're all children of God. He said, why don't you change what you're doing and just let this thing go and see where it goes? He's in pretty good shape. Came out of a pitfall that I thought was going to be staggering for a while, and came out of it flying colors. He's had the best summer of his life. He's been enjoyable. He's back on the horses. He's a cowboy again. And he got through a really tough teenage year. A couple of them. Tough. And here's kind of my message as I wrap this up, and it's a very simple one. What we do here is we stay the course and we weather the storm together with God and you in it. That's what we do. We just stay the course. You know, sometimes it looks like, you know, that this the sea is so stormy. I don't know, but just stay the course. Weather the storm together with us and God. And when it boils down to what my sponsor likes to say, and we kind of shout at each other, is that the answer to every problem in Alcoholics Anonymous is simple. It's more Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that way you don't get lost around here into complexities. Like Dr. Bob said in his farewell address, these scientific complexities that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have little concern to do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have to watch that I'm not falling into the scientific mindset that something seems a little bit more interesting than going to that meeting tonight and making coffee with Sam and Billy. And it's hot. Yesterday, I was speaking at a conference online. I didn't feel like going. I was staying in my porch. Dale comes over once a week, and he sees all these piles. In fact, now when he comes over, I'm cutting early in the morning. He knows I'm very alcoholic. And it was one of those days that I wanted to get things done. You know, I wanted to get that porch finished stained. I wanted to get some more woods done. I wanted to water the garden, water the flowers, water, you know, whatever. I wanted to clean the basement, have the upstairs clean. My son and my wife were at Gatlinburg this weekend. I wanted them to come home to a clean house. I wanted to get all this done, laundry done, all that done. I don't feel like going to this meeting. I don't. But I went. That's what you talk. 10 minutes into that meeting, I got into what I call the AA zone. The AA zone is, I knew this is exactly the place I needed to be at the exact time. And for the next 2 hours listening to those speakers, I was blown away. That's what happens here. That's the magic. Okay? I went despite myself and it happened to me. And it doesn't just happen once in a while. It happens every time. And you know what? After the meeting, I got all that done. Isn't that funny? Once you get in the energy field, you're not burning up energy foolishly as you try to arrange light to suit yourself. You get the energy. And all of a sudden, it doesn't make sense sometimes. I got to do laundry. I don't have time to go to the meeting. And you don't go to the meeting, you don't do the laundry. But if you go to the meeting, you get the laundry. We have spiritual logic here, but you got to join us to figure out what that is. And there's nothing here to figure out. There's only things to do. And when I do them, I get better. I don't have to figure it out. I don't have to figure out my brain or all dissect why I'm thinking that way. I'm a human being. I'm an alcoholic. Sometimes I just think negative. Okay. No big deal. Pray, go to a meeting, talk to your sponsor, talk to other people, and what you'll find out, your mind's not so negative anymore. The magic happens. So I'm going to end this on this note, that God could have given this message to our friends in the psychological community, but he did not. But he allowed them to make major contributions from non-alcoholics to AA. God could have given this message to our friends in the medical department. But he didn't. But he allowed them to make major contributions to Alcoholics Anonymous, change the face of AA from non-alcoholics. God could have given this message to our friends in religion, but he didn't. But they made major contributions to us. Just look at some history of what they and what we took from them. God gave this message to a broke-down stock speculator named Bill Wilson and a washed-up proctologist named Dr. Bob. What they had in common wasn't just alcoholism. They had in common hopeless alcoholism. One gave life and one brought life. They found that union in Akron of June 10th, 1935. When we say that was Dr. Bob's last drink, we found out that union produced results. That one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, there was a certain chemistry that didn't happen anywhere else. Yeah, Wilson and Dr. Bob had been involved in those other things to a certain extent, but it had not brought about sobriety. And so we find that Alcoholics Anonymous, when we boil it down, is one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. We've been given a gift. We've been given a message, and we want to go ahead and we want to be able to execute that in our lives. It becomes our primary purpose, or if you will, our mission statement. And what Bill left us with is one, I think, my favorite chapter, and that changes all the time in the big book, is the 11th chapter of Vision for You, which I like to call a vision for us. And what he did in that chapter, he passed that torch to us, to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That's the whole existence. That's why we're here tonight. We're going to tell a story about that. We're going to tell a story of hope and recovery so somebody maybe can latch on, jump on, and say, hey, yeah, me too. I need to get this thing. What do I need to do? And I have finished, and I